Hello, everyone. Welcome to Loitering, the occasional but lovable traveling mini pod. I'm your host, Sonia Paul, and today we're loitering at an Alice in Wonderland-esque hotel in Nashville, Tennessee. And I'm sitting here with a very special guest. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Sure. My name is Simranjeet Singh. I am a professor of religion. I serve as a senior religion fellow for the Sikh Coalition.
Okay. So for reference, in case you're wondering about the sounds around us, I mentioned this is an Alice in Wonderland themed hotel. There are like waterfalls around us. There's greenery around us. We're basically sitting on a park bench inside the hotel amongst the trees, people watching.
And right near the river.
Yeah. So for today's topic, actually, we're going to talk about Twitter habits as the person you are. So, like, what kind of news and information do you find yourself finding and distributing, Simran?
I do a few things on Twitter, and I guess the easiest things to talk about is I try and present myself as a sort of full person. So I include photos of myself having fun, things I enjoy. You know, I'm a sports fan, so I include tweets about sports. So that's the stuff I do, I guess, more occasionally, but it's important to me to go beyond the other stuff that I do more frequently, which is highlighting instances of discrimination, profiling, hate crimes, things like that. And really the idea for me there is to help bring attention to stories that aren't being covered otherwise, to bring these stories to the attention of journalists who might cover them, or even just using Twitter as a form of media that then would get these stories out there that wouldn't get out there otherwise. So
Right. That's
kind of like, the idea.
Like, as a journalist, I follow you for this reason. And I know a lot of other journalists do the same, because you're kind of like the brown guy that people would follow to follow stories about brown people. Not even just like Sikh people, but people who might be racialized a certain way as being other, as being Muslim, as being a terrorist. And one of the things I want to ask you about is how do you manage to stand it? Because like that kind of stuff is very painful and heartbreaking, especially when it's like you're looking at people who could essentially be yourself. But at the same time, you want to be this authority, this sort of figure for others to want to know. How do you personally take care of yourself?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's an important. I think part of it for me is it's always been my disposition to be optimistic in general. I think that's partially shaped by how my parents raised me, and I think partially shaped by my sort of Sikh background, and that's a core value of ours, this idea we call Jadavikala, eternal optimism. So I think that's part of it. But I think a few things that I've learned over time in terms of coping with these sorts of difficulties. I think one is, you know, I'm a historian, and in our tradition, we think about ourselves in the context of history often. And so it really helps me to maintain perspective that, yes, things are difficult now, and they have been in particular moments of my lifetime for people who look like me and various other communities. But in relation to what others have endured, it may not be as bad. So that helps me actually a lot to maintain perspective. Another thing I find very helpful is to not take hate personally. I think it's very easy to find yourself in situations where people attack you and feel like they're attacking you as an individual. And it's really helpful, I think, one, to recognize that their hate is actually their problem. It's not your problem. And also to realize, you know, to have enough humility to say it's not actually about me in particular. There are these larger sort of social conditions that are shaping their understandings and causing them to have antagonism towards
Right. People
who look different.
But what about the feeling that some people might have, which is like, well, why should I have to bear the burden of their societal ignorance or their ignorance of people at large versus like me personally?
Right. Yeah, I think that's a perfectly fair frustration to have. And I know many people who feel it. I guess for me, you know, I enjoy lots of privilege in my life. You know, yes, I am a Sikh who wears a turban and beard, and I face discrimination in various ways, but I also have a lot of privileges. And I recognize that, and I have had access to education, I have financial stability, I have access to media and resources. So for me, it I see it more as a responsibility than an obligation. I don't feel like I have to be doing this work, but I feel like I want to be and could be using the limited skills that I have for this particular purpose. And so, I sort of embrace it. I mean, if there is going to be bigotry and hate out there, then I would rather have it directed towards me than other people, because I feel like I want to stand up against that stuff. It's part of the person that I want to be. It's a weird way to say it, because it might come off as if I'm saying I invite hate, which is not what I mean, but it's more like if bigotry is going to occur, I would rather have it be me than anyone else. That's sort of what our Sikh faith teaches us. And so, yeah, in a strange way, I sort of welcome it. I've never talked about it in that way before, but yeah.
I mean, I'm just like wondering, because as like a religious scholar, as someone who does the kind of work that you do, I can imagine that you probably find yourselves in a lot of non-diverse spaces, or a lot of spaces in which like maybe the majority may be white, the majority may be like Jewish or Christian. Do you ever feel that you have to sort of like water down who you are in order for them to actually grasp it? And I'm just like wondering, because like we're still in the state where we have to explain what certain traditions are,
right.
Help people understand that this is what it means to be of this particular faith before we can actually get into the issues within these faiths themselves.
Right. No, I think that's true. And I know for a lot of scholars, and especially scholars of religion, where you're sort of dealing with issues of conviction and belief, there's a sensitivity to the oversimplification of ideas. You know, if scholars work within sort of the complexities and the details, and it becomes very hard to pull yourself out of that and say, well, let me simplify that in a way. So my approach has been, and because I'm interested in this public work, what I like to try and do is to simplify, but not to oversimplify. And what I mean by that is there's a way in which one can meet the audience, whoever the audience is, where they are, and you do so without distorting through oversimplification. So I think the danger becomes when I feel like I'm compromising the integrity of the ideas because I'm simplifying it too much, and I don't like to do that. I don't feel like I have to do that. In a way, it's also about ego, right? For a lot of scholars, they are more concerned about their ideas as opposed to the messages that the audience is receiving. So it's less about like the education of the audience and more about themselves. And you know, for me, I see education and this engagement as a sort of service. So I try to think of it as not about me, it's entirely for others. And so it's a little bit easier to present ideas in a way that people can understand it.
Right. So you never get sick of being like the brown guy, the sick guy, being that guy, because you're like everywhere, I feel. Maybe because I pay attention, I feel that you're everywhere.
Yeah, or yeah, we're just friends, and so...
Okay.
Or so, no, I don't get sick of being a voice, but I want to be careful not to become the only voice. And we heard a speaker this weekend talk about that it's great to have new platforms and opportunities to talk about issues for a community that hasn't had an opportunity to do so. But it becomes very dangerous to end up in a situation where you're not cultivating other voices and opening doors for other people. And so I try and do that, and I want to do more of that. Yeah.
You're like so good-natured about this. I'm kind of like trying to like hear like frustration or like pet peeves. Do you have like any pet peeves?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of some that relate to this work as opposed to like general like wash your dishes kind of thing. Okay, so here's one that I find frustrating, and that is I get critiqued by people who see single examples of my work and not the sort of larger body of it, and take those examples and take them out of context and say, okay, you think this because you said this particular sentence. And you know, so that sort of like representation out of context, I think is frustrating, because what ends up happening is people create entire narratives and ideas about who you are and what you stand for that aren't actually accurate. So some of the biggest critiques that I get from within the communities that I try to serve are actually misguided in that way. Like, people don't actually ever talk to me about those critiques. They just sort of take something from here or there and sort of build a whole narrative out of it.
So you're talking about people who are like new to understanding Sikhism or other faiths that you would be talking about versus people within the community?
No. I'm talking about primarily, like, whether I'm talking about, you know, Sikh issues, Muslim issues, you know, general brown people issues, people within those communities often come forward and say, why didn't you say it in this way or that way? And I just, so one example is, a lot of my work around Islamophobia is structured around this sort of double move that Sikhs make anytime there's any sort of hate incident targeting a Sikh, which is, first of all, I'm not Muslim, and second, if I was, it wouldn't be okay. So there's this, like, educational step that you have to do to, like, distinguish, but then there's this ethical move that you make that says, well, it's messed up regardless to target anyone. You know, in some instances, people have taken that first step out of context and have said, well, you said I'm not a Muslim, so you're essentially throwing Muslims under the bus, which, in my work, is clear that that's not what I do and not what I'm about, but then I get critiqued for that. So I find that to be very frustrating, but I think that's a common problem. You know, the more you put yourself out there, the more sort of distortion can occur. And so I guess it's just part of being out in the public a little bit more.
Right. And that's also what happens when people only, like, hear part of the story, right? And not the whole story. Like, they just hear, like, oh, I'm not Muslim. And then so they think that you're kind of pushing yourself away from a certain community as if that community is bad, but they're not waiting to hear what else you have to say.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And, like, if you look at, you know, when you have this space to have a full conversation, then it's fine. But if you're working on Twitter, you know, one tweet might have that, and then the next tweet might follow up with the second point. Somebody might just see that one, you know, so it, like, it really gets pulled out.
You can't fit it all in 140 characters.
Yeah.
So do you ever take, like, Twitter breaks? Do you feel that you can take a Twitter break?
I do. I'm not as active as I used to be. I think in some ways I really picked up after the election. I used it as sort of therapy.
To, like, stop Twitter or pick up the use of...
To pick up the use of Twitter as a way to, like...
I did the opposite.
Yeah, I know. And I guess, you know, I one of my habits has changed over the last... So I have a 1.5-year-old at home. And so since she was born, I've tried, you know, I don't spend much time on social media when I'm at home now, because in the evenings it would just be like, you know, have dinner and pull out your computer and, like, look at stuff. And now that time is more precious. And I that's actually one way that I bring in self-care a little bit more, to save that time for myself. I do find myself monitoring constantly just to see what kind of things are going on. It is on the back of my mind that I don't want to be missing something big that could be happening, because I really feel like there are stories out there that are really important that don't get covered because people don't know about them. And so I really, like, bring those stories forward when I can.
Oh, man. We've loitered a long time. We could loiter a lot longer, but we gotta wrap up. But before we do wrap up, do you have any other thing on your mind that is, like, pressing against your brain that you want the world to know in this episode of Loitering?
I guess one of my real concerns, or one of the things I've been thinking about a lot recently, is there's a common trope about Islamophobia in response, that where people say it can't be racism because Islam is not a race. And so, very simply, to think about what is happening with sort of racialized understandings of Muslims as people, and just thinking about, well, if there are incidents occurring against people perceived to be Muslims, and that includes South Asians, Arabs, anybody with brown skin, Sikhs, then really what that's telling us is it doesn't, like, people aren't necessarily understanding these individuals on the basis of religious identity. They're using racial markers to do so, and that makes it racialized. And so I've been thinking of, and writing quite a bit recently about, you know, examples, stories, where we can clearly illustrate that it's actually not about Islam all the time. It's about race. I would like for listeners to think a little critically about that and equip themselves with some examples that cut against that narrative, because, or that trope, because it's I'm finding it more commonplace, and I have been disappointed in people's inability to respond to that.
Wow. Thanks so much. Okay, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to Loitering, the occasional but lovable traveling mini pod. Goodbye.